You're listening to episode 283 of the Star Wars Report podcast. Coming up this episode, we have the Last Jedi photos from Vanity Fair, story group details, John Boyega has got a big deal action, and the new LEGO Star Wars The Last Jedi set reveals way too much. That's right, everyone. You're listening to the Star Wars Report. I'm one of your hosts, Mark Herleman, and out and about in Ireland, nice old Ireland, is our good friend Riley Blanton. And joining us, our executive producer. I believe we could call you executive now, right? Or were you always the executive? I don't know, but he's editing as well. Bruce Gibson is with us today.
Hey, Mark. You know, executive was the official title. Executive producer because was what Riley said to me when he wanted me to do this, because he said, huh, sounds impressive, right? Executive producer. And I'm like, oh, come on, you're just trying to sweeten things.
Maybe we need to add supreme executive producer. You're getting Snoke-like.
I'm just snooking over here. That's what I'm doing. Executive producer Snoke. That's what I am.
Yes. Yeah, in fact, we've got some Snoke details. Be sure to pay attention to the end of the episode when we hit our spoilers. We'll keep all that for later. But first, we've got a lot of stuff, so let's just jump right into it. We've got some news, don't we, Bruce?
Oh, we've got news.
We have something to report.
Come closer, I have good news.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
We can send a clear transmission.
There it is. Listen.
Yes, we have news here in Vanity Fair, and I'm sure just about everybody listening here has probably seen the photos that came out a few days ago. It was sometime in the middle of the week. I think it was actually on May 25th, the 40th anniversary.
I think you're right, because I remember seeing the pictures showing up across my Facebook feed. I didn't actually get a chance to read the article until much later. But all the different aliens and stuff, I didn't even realize that's what I was seeing until I saw Leia. Then I was like, oh, that's what's going on. Because you saw the little picture of the guy with like the hand puppet, little tiny alien looking thing. And everyone's like, I want to know the story about that. And then, of course, you know, Brian Young is like, I want to know about this guy with the horse looking guy, the guy that looks like a Bothan. And of course, I'm like, that can't be a Bothan. I mean, if it is a Bothan, I guess I'm okay with it, but that can't be a Bothan, can it? Like a hairless Bothan, like one of those hairless cat style Bothans? I don't know.
Well, the Bothans we have seen are now, I guess, considered legends, so they could kind of change the look of the Bothans, but I was wondering if that was a Bothan too. I don't think so, but the thought did cross my mind.
Well, either way, it's tall. I mean, you're looking around here and you've got quite a plethora of faces as well as heights and hairdos.
Yeah, I think, seeing our regular cast is, of course, interesting. But these pictures of these are the people in the casino, which it's called the Canto Bite Casino. Is that right? Bite?
Yeah, or Blight. I wasn't exactly sure. Let me double check here.
I'm looking in the article.
I also had it.
It looks like it says Bite. Canto Bite. That's kind of weird. Well,
yeah.
I guess it's a casino that takes a bite out of crime. But
it's
really interesting because it's just very elaborate costumes and aliens we haven't seen before, as we're discussing, like the one we thought here is a Bothan. But I mean, it's just really elegant.
Yeah. In fact, some of the characters we're going to learn about through the film, Rose is going to be tagging along with Finn, and their adventure is going to take them to this casino. And yeah, it's Bite, but it's spelled like light with a B. It's so I don't know if they're going to like add some accent to it, but it's a Star Wars Monte Carlo type environment with the little James Bondish, a little To Catch a Thief, the director said. So that's interesting. Like, honestly, when I first saw those pictures, I was thinking like a ball or something. I wasn't thinking casino. And now that I'm thinking casino, I'm thinking, have I ever been to a casino that people would dress like this? I mean, this is a hoity-toity casino, right?
Yeah, it is. And I thought the same thing, too. This is a ball, some kind of formal occasion. But I guess that can happen within a casino. And this is maybe some really rich casino area. But if anything, these pictures reminded me of the pictures we saw from The Force Awakens when it was Maz Kanata's pirates, quote. I remember them saying it's a band of pirates, and it was the same thing, a whole bunch of aliens kind of on display. in Vanity Fair.
Yeah. I wonder if, because we see Finn standing with Poe and he's got, I don't know, I mean, he's got Poe's jacket on and he looks all better. I mean, he's not in the suit. I'm kind of curious, like, are we going to see Finn completely healed by the end of this episode? And if so, does that mean we're going to either see a span of time or a really impressive medical unit?
Those are things I think, we've got to see Finn getting all better. I can't imagine he's going to sit out this film and he's just in a state of a coma of some point where he's like not talking. And what, at the end of the film, he just wakes up. I can't imagine. Finn's got to be prominent in this movie.
They give him the Skywalker treatment. He gets to say like nothing. He just looks at the camera and he's like, really? I've been asleep this whole time. Like, come on, guys. You know, I got to give props, though. The photographer here is Annie Leibovitz, I believe is how you say her name. She does some great photography. But David Camp, he wrote this article, and there is so much going on in this article. You had mentioned spinoff shows, which I don't believe we actually put in the show notes, but I thought that was interesting because that was something that I had missed. But one of the things for me that really jumped out was the fact that they had given so much detail about the story group. I've been somebody that's been begging to know more about the interactions between the directors, the producers, the story group itself, and how that with Del Rey, Marvel and stuff, how that all cohesively comes together. And they actually go into some details about that. And they go on and they, part of what makes Lucasfilm's new story system work is that Kathleen Kennedy has set up a formidable support structure for her filmmakers. Upon her arrival, she put together a story department at Lucasfilm San Francisco headquarters, overseen by Carrie Hart, a development executive and former screenwriter she has long worked with. The story group, which numbers 11 people, maintains the narrative continuity integrity of all Star Wars properties that exist across the various platforms, animation, video games, novels, comic books, and most important, of course, the movies. They write, the whole team reads each draft of the screenplay as it evolves, Hart explained to him, as they try as much as they can to smooth out anything that isn't connecting. But they also go on to say what the story group does not do, Hart said, is impose plot point mandates on the filmmakers. Now, that is huge because that is something I was curious about of, you know, do they give them plot points? Like, I want you to go here. And that's surprising to me because this actually sounds like they're given a lot of freedom. Like, here's a lump of Play-Doh. It's Star Wars brand Play-Doh. Make me something. What do you want me to make? Well, it doesn't matter. You just use your imagination. Like, that's very interesting. Johnson goes on and mentions the fact that he had so much leeway he was given to cook up the action for episode 8 from scratch. It said the preset was episode 7, and that was kind of it. If anything, he wanted more give and take, so he actually moved to San Francisco for about 6 weeks during the writing process. He actually took an office 2 doors down from Hart so they could meet fully with the whole group twice a week. Now, that makes me wonder, will other directors be as passionate and care as much as he does? Because that's cool. If that's going to be the process they do with all the, you know, the directors and stuff where they fly them in, give them a place to set up shop while they're doing that. But I don't think that's going to be the case. And you know me, Bruce. I mean, I'm someone who's lived and loved legends. And I've seen what sometimes too much leeway can, you know, it can create problems. And that creates a perception of a train wreck. You know, you hear so often that Legends was a train wreck of continuity, and it had some issues at times, but overall it was pretty good. But it was that freedom that allowed those issues to arise, and that's always been something that I've been kind of concerned with. So this brings up a really good point, and also at the same time, it still worries me to death. I mean, talk me off the ledge, man.
Well, I think with the filmmakers, they do have leeway to do what they need to do. And I think the story group is there to make sure that they don't go too far over the edge of, well, that doesn't make sense with something that was mentioned in a previous movie. So I think they're there for consultation, but they're not giving direction of where the story needs to go. So that really is up to the director. What they don't really specify in this article is the relationship with the authors of the comics and the novels and the games and such. How much leeway do they give them? Now, I saw Chuck Wendig years ago. It was the same weekend that Aftermath was coming out, and someone asked him how much of the story group told him what to write. And he said that he was told, just write a story. He said, they didn't give me anything. They didn't tell me the story. He says, I've had this story kind of going in my head for a while. And he said that that's what he wrote. And then the story group looked at it. And sure, they gave him little bits and pieces like you can put this in here. Here's, I think they gave him a little brief understanding of what's going on in the galaxy. But the way he presented it, that he was given, you know, pretty much a lot of freedom. And then, of course, if they read something that contradicted something or whatever, they would edit that out or tell him to rewrite it.
Well, and then you have the fact that Johnson also moved Kylo Ren's scar because he felt that it should be moved over. It worked better for what he wanted with the makeup and the character look. And it seems like that's a decision he decided to make on his own.
Yep.
And that would be something that I would have thought that would have been a story group would be like, no. But I would think in this case, it's probably one of those things where they saw it, they waited over and said, you know, it's a scar. It's not that big a deal.
Yeah, which, it's not really a story element. It's more of an artistic element.
Yeah, and now some of these other characters that are also shown, which is funny because it was Benicio del Toro's character, people had shown a picture of his face where he's got a scar, and everybody shows, you know, the Ezra. And I'm guilty of it. I shared it too. Oh, coincidence. And someone's like, well, Ezra's got two scars, and you know, Del Toro's only got one. And I'm like, well, you know, Lucasfilm, they're really not that concerned with continuity of scars, as we know now with Kylo. But we do know that Del Toro's character is going to have shadiness about him, some unclear allegiances. But he is unnamed in the film, although the filmmakers themselves call him DJ, and they say, you'll see there's a reason why we call him DJ, Johnson said. There's also a prominent officer in the Resistance named Vice Admiral Holdo, which, and when we get to the spoiler section, we've got some more details about that character. That's the character that's played by Laura Dern. So I kind of feel like that character is going to be like the next Admiral Ackbar, or maybe even more so. Like, I have a feeling like this character is going to get some actual screen time. I don't know. Laura Dern, she's not somebody you just cast as a Bail Organa, or maybe they will. I don't know. I mean, Jimmy Smits was not somebody you usually cast to just pound his knuckles on a side of a wall, and that's about all he's saying through the film, you know?
Yeah. I got the impression from reading this article that Laura Dern isn't in the movie a lot. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think she's a major, major character. They've been indicating Rose Tico is going to have a big part, and they mentioned something in here about Laura Dern's part isn't as big, or maybe I've read mm-hmm. that somewhere else. It's not that she doesn't it doesn't mean that she doesn't have a big part. I just don't know if she's going to have a lot of scenes.
Yeah, that leads me to thinking she's going to be like an Admiral Ackbar type character. I mean, we got to remember that the Resistance leadership has, you know, not the Resistance leadership, but the actual government leadership has been wiped out. So I would think anybody in a military fashion is probably looking to Leia to lead them out of this. And I wouldn't even be surprised if they were like, you know what, we're going to give you a full commission and we're going to adopt the Resistance as our army because we now have no fleet. I mean, I could see them doing something like that. But at the same time, they're going to have to reestablish who the leaderships, who the leader are. I don't know. So I think she could easily be one of those new characters that has a more prominent role. Whether it's not in this film, I think she's going to be the new Mon Mothma type, although not political, but more military. That's why I think Ackbar is the way to go.
She could be a new Mon Mothma type, but I wondered before this if she was going to be a mom type, meaning Rey's mom. And this is leaning towards no, it's still possible. When they said Laura Dern was going to be in the new film, I thought, oh, I can see her being Rey's mom, and maybe she, you know, her and Luke got together or were married or whatever. But now it's still possible, but it just doesn't quite look that way to me now.
Yeah. Now, the Rose character, she's played by Kelly Marie Tran. She is also a sister of Paige, who is a character that was witnessed in one of the scenes with Poe Dameron earlier, too. But see, her part is going to be one of the large ones because she's going to be in a behind-the-scenes enemy lines mission with Boyega's Finn. Now, we had heard something about this where they had seen Finn in his Imperial garb and had ran into another stormtrooper or something like that. I'd heard something about that. I don't know if there's any truth to it. But if they did do something like that, clearly Finn's role is going to take on a more undercover agent. And you kind of almost get like a feeling like maybe he's going to become like a fulcrum agent. I don't know if they're going to be doing anything along those lines anymore at this timeline point. But he definitely is one of those undercover types. And I'm curious as to how big of a role hers is going to be. Like, are they only sending her because she's a mechanic and she's got a certain, you know, skill set that's needed for the mission? Or is there something more to her? You know, I mean, they talk about her being a maintenance worker. You know, what else? What else is she bringing to the game? I mean, is that like an engineering type maintenance worker, or is she like, you know, somebody that's just like a tinkerer?
It indicates there's a Rose Finn adventure that's going on, which answers the question, is Finn going to make it through this movie, or is he going to stay injured? It sounds like we're splitting our characters up, similar to Empire Strikes Back, where you have Luke going to Dagobah to see Yoda, and you have Leia and Han and crew over here, and, you know, whatever. And so the team split up. It sounds like Rey's with Luke, and then Finn is over here with Rose doing an adventure. Then we have Poe maybe with Leia, and I feel like there may be three storylines. We're going to follow the Finn story, the Rey story, and the Poe story, and there are going to be supporting characters around them. And yes, when I say supporting characters, I'm looking at Luke as being a supporting character to the Rey storyline.
Ooh, bold words. bold words.
Luke has had his time in the old trilogy.
Well, that's true. I mean, Luke was a big deal in the first one, but now we've got John Boyega. I mean, Finn is a big deal as EU or EW.com. Boy, it's really hard to see those letters, not just CEU. But EDU, did I go again? EW.com, they mentioned, they have an interview with him where he talks about everything Finn and why Finn is the big deal that he claimed to be.
And again, Anthony Bresnikan, friend of the show, wrote this article. And Boyega says, quote, "The funny thing is..." Now this... Wait, hold on. This is not my impression of Boyega, just so everybody knows. You know, I don't want anybody going, "Man, he does an awful Finn voice or Boyega voice." So anyway, Boyega says, quote, "The funny thing is, between 7 and 8, Finn's now a big deal. He is now a big deal. Imagine that. You get taken down by Kylo Ren. Think about what the gossip's going to be like in the Resistance. Oh, that's the guy that got slashed by Kylo." And then he breaks into a... So John starts to smile and wink and wave, you know, like he's waving at Resistance fighters. "Hey, how you doing, guys? How you doing? Yeah, I was there. Then the Falcon picked me up. Oh, yeah, I knew Han Solo, by the way. We were pretty close." And he says all that kind of stuff. They have that fan moment when they see him, which makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, now Finn is a big deal because they're like, "Oh, yeah, he was with Han Solo and he was with the Resistance and he did this, and he did that." So Finn is a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, and we know, like, as he says, Finn's in a bad way at the end of episode 7. He's got a lot of issues. He's got slashed with a saber. And if you read the book, it's from both sides. So that's just a little poke at
Mark,
continuity.
Is that still bothering you? Wait, we've got
just a little.
We got Finn slashed.
I've got to let it go.
We have Finn slashed on both sides. We have Kylo's scar in the middle or on one side. This is going to be kind of crazy. Maybe you should be
this
on the
story. This is adding up. This is adding up, man. We got little continuity errors. No, it's not that big a deal. Not like Finn, that is. But the bottom line is, you know, he got took down real hard. He's in a coma. They talk about that suit. The whole thing helps him to recover, but we're not sure whether that means he'll wake up. I mean, clearly he's going to have to wake up. But at times they make it sound, you know, they talk about the suit and, you know, in the trailer we see him in what looks like a pod, but I guess that could be the suit for all we know, or maybe the type of pod that you're in is like, you know, his coma is so bad that he's like in an iron lung thing, but because of the technology, when he wakes up, he's able to arms transform out of it and stuff and he can be mobile. I'm not sure. Or if they give him a different type of suit or something like Darth Vader. You know, where he's in a suit needed for the rest of his life because of injuries.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. So, yeah, he could have some implant or some suit or something about him that's different from what we've seen before that affects him physically. And he maybe has to move differently for a while until he gets used to it.
Well, and it being a slash to his back. I mean, I'm looking at that picture from Vanity Fair of him standing there. And I mean, he could have something hidden underneath the jacket. I mean, maybe he's got something that's wrapped around the back of his torso. Maybe his spine's held together by bolts.
Well, yeah, because he mentions, meaning John mentions that, you know, lightsaber doesn't really heal easily. And even though even though you've got this scar, it continues to burn and it still is, you know, feels like the flames in you. So it's not just like, oh, I got a little scar and, you know, there's something about it physically that he still feels. So there's got to be something that is there to help relieve the pain and help him heal quicker. So it goes away.
Yeah. He says once it's in, it continues to burn the skin and the cells. It's not a piece of flame that racks your body. It's something that works like a stab wound. It's really brutal. You know, and that's something I hadn't really thought about. I mean, aside from the lack of blood when we see certain arms and stuff getting cut off due to cauterization, you know, and we see Baba Panda or whatever his name is, Mr. Old Tuskface, lose his hand and you see the blood splatter on the ground. I mean, I always assumed that it was one of those things like it didn't hurt so bad, but I don't know. I mean, that's definitely a new twist on that that I kind of dig. I mean, that really makes Vader, you know, I mean, think about that. Like each one of his stumps are always aching on top of all the other burns he's got. Like that's really going to drive some rage. I mean, and then you think about the fact that when Dooku cut off his hand when he was just Anakin Skywalker, you know, if that was always hurting, and then Luke losing his hand, I mean, Well, you almost wonder if at times, like Yoda says, you know, once you start down the dark side forever, it'll dominate your path or whatever. If maybe something like that, like, you know, you went up against these dark siders and you lost a part of yourself and the price you pay is to burn forever in that spot. Like maybe that's the price of the Kyber crystal.
Ooh, yeah. See, I like that. It's like an injury from a lightsaber. You're always burning. And and that burn is, of course, pain, and you associate burning with hell and evil, and or it can drive you to a bad place. Just this burning pain that's constantly inside of you. So even if you're mentally in pain, like Anakin was, and also now physically in pain that doesn't go away, that would really drive Anakin over the edge.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of mental pain, I mean, we also learn Daisy Ridley's Rey is going to be training with Luke Skywalker, who had lost his first or only set of students. I mean, that's got to be painful for him to go back down memory lane with that. Like you said, you know, they're all being split up in the Empire Strikes Back fashion. And while she's off training with Luke, Oscar Isaac got to spend some time with Carrie Fisher.
He was on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and we've got that interview right here.
We do.
We were lucky enough right before she passed to have Carrie Fisher on to talk with her and about her new book and her experiences doing the first Star Wars series. Without giving anything away, do you do scenes with her character? Did Poe Dameron and Leia have scenes in this movie?
Yeah, actually, a large amount of the stuff that I got to do was with Carrie, which was amazing. It was actually, I remember the first day of shooting was a scene with Carrie, and it was still... You know, oftentimes that first day, the filmmakers, everybody's trying to get the tone and figure it out. Yeah. And I remember it was a scene where I come up to talk to her and she's very upset with me and slaps me. And Ryan kept doing it over.
The director?
And over. Ryan Johnson, the director, yeah. I think it ended up being like 27 takes of Carrie just leaning in. And every time she'd hit like a different spot in my face.
Keeps the scene fresh.
No, she was by far one of the quickest-witted, funniest, most down-to-earth, real human beings I ever had the opportunity of working with, and she does amazing work in this. And yeah, it was definitely a heartbreaker.
I couldn't imagine, first off, what it'd be like to get that opportunity and then have Carrie Fisher pass on and you know, wonder where we go from here. Like that. In and of itself is probably a whole other topic, but to be able to be the character that got to spend so much time with her, and you know, the Poe Dameron character is already, you know, he's a captain, he's already a leader in his own right, but now he's one of the few. I mean, he's not only an ace pilot, but he's also one of a handful of fighter pilots left to the resistance. I mean, the book clearly stated that most of all of them were wiped out, and Leia ordered him and his group out of there because they were all that was left. So you've got that aspect to play with the characters. So you got Poe working more with Carrie. That gives you also that hint of, you know, they're rebuilding the military structure and we're going to see some new leadership changes. And you almost get the feeling maybe by the end of this, Poe himself might be in a position to be a general.
Possibly, yes. you know, it's, I've just, I don't know what thoughts I have about this. The passing of Carrie Fisher, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around the Leia character in this new film, especially since Kathleen Kennedy said that they aren't going to change anything about this film and she's in the movie throughout. I don't know how this leads to episode 9, where, of course, we can't see her. So I guess the thing is, looking at the Vanity Fair pictures, anytime I see her in any of those photos, I just stare at her. I'm just always thinking about her, at Carrie Fisher herself. And so when I'm thinking about these scenes where Poe is with Leia, I just keep thinking, like, how much interaction does she have with him? How prominent is her character in this movie? Because if she's a very prominent character and in a lot of scenes, which it almost sounds like she may be, I don't know how you get through to episode 9 and not have her there. And so I guess it's like anytime we talk about Carrie Fisher being in this movie, it just kind of bothers me in the fact that I'm sad that she's gone. And then I wonder, well, how are we going to continue without her, especially if she's so prominent in this film? It's just going to make it harder to go to the next one.
And I keep wondering if they had planned for Princess Leia to move beyond this realm like her husband. I mean, it would make sense if they did something like that with each of the big three, because they've talked before about this being their last trilogy, but also being Rey's. And if they were to continue on, the best way to not have to worry about them always being those supporting cast members would be to have them all pass away in succession. And then you could have that moment of, you know, this is their moment. And it would make sense, the statements we've got, because they did also say they weren't bringing Carrie Fisher back digitally, even though her estate had willed off and signed off on permissions to. But I think about the fact, you know, like the different movies that Carrie Fisher had played in her past and stuff. And then think about the aspect of what it'd be like to film with Carrie Fisher. I mean, you know, Oscar Isaacs talk about getting wailed on by her. And I'm just, you know, I think about Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back and, you know, some zany movies that she has been in. And then you think about even just the fact of the pictures you see of her on set for The Empire Strikes Back with Chewie and her in Return of the Jedi in the bathing suit playing around in the ocean. I mean, she always had this playful spirit and stuff. And so when you think about who she was and you think about poor Oscar Isaac sitting there just getting railed on and railed on.
Well, you know, we have to get that. We have to get that as a deleted scene. I mean, I should say scenes where we see all 27 of those one after the other.
That I think I would probably end up almost suffocating. I would be laughing so hard if they had all of it, because that's, I mean, just thinking about it makes me chuckle. I can't help. And then to put yourself in Oscar's place, because you're just like, and here she is, little Carrie Fisher, pummeling me over and over again.
All in different places.
Not getting it right. Yeah. Which is so opposite of my wife. My wife is like the Terminator, man. She will hit you in the exact same spot over and over again. And you're just like, good Lord, woman. She's got six brothers, man. It's just brutal.
So what, your wife beats you? Is that what you're saying now, Mark?
Well, we used to play slug bug in the car, but eventually it became, we're just going to call him out. I couldn't take more than three, and double slug bugs were off the table immediately. I'm like, no.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if Carrie's doing this, choosing different areas because she doesn't want to hurt him and hit the same spot over and over and over again. So she's choosing different spots. I don't know what's better, getting hit in the same spot or just being surprised and like, oh, you're poking me in the eye this time. Oh, wait, now you hit my ear. Oh, that nose. Oh, man, that hurt.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. And it's, you know, as he put it at the end, you know, it's definitely a heartbreaker. And, you know, it goes to that curiosity side of us that have been in fandom for long, that when the series is over and stuff and a few years pass, they start explaining, you know, well, this is how this was created. This was the direction. This is why that happened. This is why Jason Solo ended up living and Anakin Solo died. You know, I mean, those little things. And I think when we get to that point and we're able to look back on this after episode 9 is already filmed and we know what the next trilogy is going to be, and we see, you know, the life events of what happened with Carrie Fisher, and we see where they were at in the production and stuff, and why the choices they made were the ones they made, I think it's going to be one of those things where everyone's going, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think it gets dangerous because, you know, they want to give us all these statements and stuff to set our minds at ease. And yet you know, you don't want to give so much that people are putting things together, and you don't want to be disrespectful to Carrie's family and to Carrie herself. I mean, you know, it's always one of those touchy subjects when somebody passes away, and it's even more so when it's somebody that everybody feels like she's royalty to us.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really weird to go back and listen to these episodes once the movies come out and see how wrong we are about some things. You know, I remember way back in StarWars.com, they allowed you to create your own websites, your own Star Wars websites. And this was at the time, I think, when maybe between episode 1 and 2, maybe 2 and 3, but it was definitely during the prequel time.
It would have been 1 and 2.
Yeah, 1 and 2. So I remember writing this whole big blog about, you know, what's going to happen in the next two movies, and I was so wrong. I was so off.
Oh, no, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, no, that was actually between 3 and 4, or right after 2 and 3 as it was going into 3. Yeah, okay. Because I even had one. I had one dedicated to the New Jedi Order, and you could work with other people and stuff. Yeah, that was some good times, man. That was like when the website, you know, the StarWars.com website and its forums and stuff, I mean, those were like the golden era days before it all kind of came crashing, and many of us internet geeks like myself were forced onto Facebook and Twitter because that was the only way to get in contact with the Leland Cheese and the Pablo Hidalgos. It was like, no, they would go to the VIP thread and you could just ask them anything. You know, those were good days, man.
Those were the days there, Mark.
That's true. Now, this week's episode has been brought to us by our good folks supporting us over at Patreon.com. That's right. If you go to Patreon.com/Star Wars Report, you can support us by pledging. Bruce, what exactly do they pledge and what do they get for pledging?
They have to pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States. No, I'm just kidding. because we welcome everybody from all over the world. This is a pledge, a financial pledge. And let me just tell you, if you've listened to these episodes several times and you hear us talk about Patreon, you might be saying, well, I still don't really get how that works. So basically, you go to this website and you pick an amount of money that you want to donate. It can be $1, it could be $5, whatever amount that you want to do. And it's a monthly donation, but you don't have to do it every month. You can donate 1 month and then just cancel. So if you just want to throw a $1 and that's it and stop it, that's fine. But
yep, and appreciated.
And it definitely is appreciated. So, yeah, just any little bit can help. And it just kind of shows your support for the Star Wars Report. And we really do see who's supporting us. And we definitely always reach out and appreciate any contribution that you do. But sometimes we have exclusive content that would be on the Patreon website. And if you donate $15 a month, you can join our Patreon calls, where our patrons who donate $15 or more a month, we all get together, and Mark's there and I'm there and Riley's there, and we all just kind of talk about Star Wars and what we're doing with the show. You get some inside information from us about it, and sometimes we're just having almost like discussions as a group as to what we should be doing on the show, or what should we change, or anything like that. But we do it once a month on a weekend. It's a lot of fun. And again, you can do $15 one month, join the call, and then you can cut back the amount if you need to, or just stop. We've had people that have actually done the $15 or more, and they join us for several months, and you know, they have to pull back for a while. So they pull back mm-hmm. the money for a couple months, and then when financially things are going good again, they come back again. So I just want people to know you have that flexibility. Don't get intimidated with the idea of, oh my gosh, they want this money from me every month. No, you can pick and choose and anytime you want to do it and whatever amount.
It's not like Rogaine and counting calories, where once you start, you can never stop.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Patreon's like my diet right now. I keep starting and stopping.
Well played. And it's a great way for us as a show to provide as well to you fans, because like Celebration, we were able to print out some buttons. You know, we were looking at doing some patches and stuff, and that's what helps us get there. I mean, you know, we're just doing this in our garages, in our bedrooms, and in our studios. And, you know, some of us happen to have bigger spaces than others and are able to, you know, utilize that. And some of us are able to travel more, like Riley, who's out at Michael Skellig right now taking awesome pictures with his sister posing as Rey.
Yeah, none of this money is income for us. It all goes into the show. It's hosting fees or equipment, that sort of thing. It really... Believe me, none of this goes into, at least not in my pockets, unless you guys aren't telling me something. But no.
Nope. Yeah, it's all goes right back. I mean, most of it has been pretty much for T-shirts. I think, what is it, when you hit like the $15 or $25 pledge point, you get one of our T-shirts. And that was the big thing that really pushed the T-shirts going and stuff. And our T-shirts have evolved a long time. You know, we had ones that we brought to Celebration Anaheim, which had the Andy Ury logo that we have. It was it was the one that was recently replaced with good old Matt Rushing's, which, you know, both are great logos and emblems. But I went from a printer that was in my area who did one of a certain style that I would have had to order a lot more to get the screen print style, to Riley found one local to him that was able to do the screen print style, and it was a lot. We didn't have to get a big order of 25 to 50. He was able to do it for like under 15 or so. And so, you know, just us shopping around and doing stuff like that, we're very frugal with the money. We make sure that it goes far, because when it's gone, it's gone.
Yep. And I think we still have some left. So, and we're going to order more. So the more, the merrier.
Which, and that's where those call-ins come in. I mean, you know, we end up finding out, hey, you know, Riley and Bethany, they're going over to Dragon Con. 30 or 40 of the patrons are going there. Hey, we're going to do a meetup party. I mean, in fact, the Tutu Tango party that happened at Celebration Orlando, that was one of those impromptu happened at a meeting thing. And in fact, it was a patron that was like, oh, hey, I happen to know a great venue. So it's just one of those great things, a great opportunity all the way around for everybody. It's a fun community to be in. You know, we are a unifying force in fandom, and you can be a part of it.
Yeah. And we love meeting you. We love meeting listeners. It's fun.
Indeed. Now, next we've got Boba's Bounty.
He's worth a lot to me. As you wish.
All right, you know how it is. It's that time of the week where we talk about the things we've loved, looked at, touched, bought, felt, grabbed, stolen. No, we didn't steal it. We actually bought it.
I hope you didn't steal it.
You know, it was Star Wars. You loved it and you wanted it. And whatever. We're going to talk about it. Bruce, what do you have for us, my man?
You know, this was really a weird week for me because I didn't do much Star Wars, and it was the 40th anniversary. So, I mean, I was online involved in discussions and reading articles and getting all excited about the 40th anniversary, but I didn't really do anything. Like, I didn't celebrate in any certain way. I didn't buy anything. But one thing I wanted to mention, my daughter, my oldest daughter, came home. She's in high school, and she's in a video production class. And she mentioned about this guy who I think is a senior. Of course, now he's graduating, but he had done a video, and it looks like it was probably a couple years ago because the video is about Star Wars, but it doesn't mention The Force Awakens. But it was an interesting video on YouTube about the prequels and why they are secretly brilliant. And that's what it's called. The Star Wars prequels are secretly brilliant. And his name on YouTube is Enforced Storm 4. And I don't know what his real name is, but he's in her class and he has like something like 2.4 million hits on this video. And it's actually really good and well edited. So if he actually ends up listening to this podcast, I applaud your editing skills. I think you do a really great job. And I encourage anyone to check out the video. It's not real long. I mean, I think I can't remember the length, but it's not, I don't think it's more than 10 minutes or not more than 15. But we'll definitely have a link in the show notes. If you go to StarWarsReport.com and go into the show notes for this episode, we'll have a link there. And so you might want to check it out.
Yes. And, you know, I was in the same boat. I mean, the anniversary came. I saw some things on the internet. I shared my little happy anniversary birthday party kind of thing. And that was it. I mean, I've been so busy with Scouts this month. They quadruple booked. They literally had us going every single weekend. We knew the last weekend of this month was our fundraiser because we do it every single year. And yet when we planned everything else, they forgot all about that. And so they had a fishing derby the first weekend of the month, which I was like, I'm not good at fishing. I'm not going to go. My son went. And then they had a quick, oh, hey, by the way, we're going to do a spring camporee with all the patrols of all the troops in all the areas. You got to come. So that was sprung on us. And we had our caving trip was just last weekend. So, of course, you know, now we're doing all this stuff. So I had no time for hardly anything. I barely was able to listen to audiobooks because I was in places with a lot of noise, watching my scouts, stuff like that. But luckily for me, a great fellow fan, Dominic Nardi, had contacted me a while back because I was seeking out certain Black Series 6-inch figures, and one of which was Darth Revan, which he happened to have a duplicate of and was willing to give to me.
Ooh,
I was blown away and floored. I mean, I was more than willing to pay for it, and he was like, "No, man, you know, I'm willing to give this." Any others you looking for out there, by the way? And I honestly wasn't even expecting the question. I was like, "Well, you know, really, at the moment, I'm looking for ones that are coming. There's a Jaina Solo that's coming down the way. There's going to be a Hera that I got to get when she comes. But I've already got Sabine, so I'm like, I'm good there. I'm like, really, what I'm missing at this point are ones that came that I never see. And, you know, like Stormtrooper or Boba Fett or Darth Maul, which, of course, you know, today at Walmart, I see the 40th series Stormtrooper. I'm like, oh, man, if only I had money. But so anyway, it came in the mail. I want to say even on the 40th anniversary. And it literally, I open it up. There's Darth Revan and a Boba Fett and a Darth Maul. I was blown away. Dominic had given me his extra Darth Maul and Fett that he had pre-opened loose, which is totally cool with me because I was going to open them anyway. And what was really cool is with the Maul, you know, it comes with two heads. One of them is with the cowl and everything. It's that deep brooding. At last, we shall reveal ourselves to the Jedi. At last, we shall have revenge.
Yes.
And then the other one is with the full horn regal where he takes the robe off and he's ready to go to town, right? Lightsabers, they come off. They do the little whole sabers come off. They detach in the middle. You can put it on his belt if you want to, kind of thing. Love it. But Dominic actually took and I don't know if he sanded the horns or just repainted them. I think he sanded them because, I mean, the quality level is here is good. I was just like, it's one of those, like, you see somebody sends a picture up on the internet and you're like, dang, where can I get that toy? Well, I made it myself with paint. You're like, oh, dude, that's some skill. Yeah, so, and then on top of it all, like, he didn't send me Boba Fett's handgun, which I didn't even know. Like, I just assumed the big holster was for the rifle that he came with, and I had him already in a two-handed grip with that, and so I got the rifle, like, a couple days later. I was like, oh, that's so cool. So now I've got Boba Fett, I've got Sabine, I've got Jango, I've got, like, a whole little Mandalorian flock growing over here, man. It's pretty awesome.
So, what, they're all displayed on your shelves now?
I wish. No, actually, this is where it's hard for me, right? So, my studio is downstairs, okay? And when me and my wife first got together and stuff, I was one of those geek kids that their bedroom was their altar. So, I've always had geek things, like Spider-Man's over the wall. I've got, you know, my Star Wars stuff's on the wall. And then, like, when I was dating a girl, I would have a corkboard that would have all the dating memorabilia stuff. And so that's basically become my house because, you know, I'm married now. So that stuff goes up on walls because, like, now it's not creepy to have it all in one little spot. I had the studio was always in our bedroom because we never had an extra room. Once we had two kids, it was like, well, each kid gets their own room. And, you know, my garage was so hot at that time, I couldn't put anything out there because it would melt, literally just so hot. So we always had the bookshelf and all my studio and stuff. I would podcast out of the bedroom for the longest dang time. Drove my wife nuts. But what's funny is, like, when I first met her, I had a Star Wars room because at the first house that my parents moved out of, me and her took over the mortgage on it and stuff. And I had my own Star Wars room then. And then when we moved out of that house, it was like, well, we only had one room. And once we had our daughter, it became her room. And so my wife for 6 years suffered with a bedroom that was a Star Wars room, right? So she couldn't stand it. She's like, I'm done with this. So now I'm finally at that point where I've got this room, but it's downstairs, and I'm like, man, I gotta have something in my bedroom. So my daughter bought me a Kylo Ren poster back before she knew Kylo was a bad guy, and she felt bad. I got it for Christmas, and she's like, I hope you still like it now that we know he's a bad guy. So it's next to my bed. I've got my in the package Sabine from Rebels, my in the package Kanan dressed up as a stormtrooper, and that's really it in my bedroom. But my bedroom's got a master bathroom, and on the other side of that, I've got a good chunk of my Hot Wheels and my titanium die-cast figures, and that's where all of my 6-inch Black Series figures, I've got two shelves up above there, and, like, I've got them all in the weirdest place. I'm actually out of room, so much so that now the Darth Revan, the Darth Maul, and all of the Rogue One troopers are all on my dresser in the bedroom, too, because I've had them up there, and I keep wanting to bring them down here, but I'm like, I'm tinkering with them in the middle of the night. You know, I'm constantly reposing them. I've got Jango Fett. He's hanging from a string with his jetpack. I'm constantly like, is he blasting down like he's dropping down, or is he blasting up, or he's got what? Like, I am so stupid for these things, and I never thought I would be. I was like $20. I balked at the price, and while these ones are really cool, they're in the same realm as the Marvel Legends figures. But what Marvel Legends figures does that these don't is a lot more posability. Mm-hmm. Like a friend fan of mine, Ben, I can't say your last name very well. It's like Saba or Saba. I'm screwing it up, and I'm so sorry. He sent me Ahsoka, and I love her to death, but my God, she cannot stand. I have to prop her up on something to get most poses that aren't just a straight leg pose. And when you see these at Celebration and you see these at the conventions, they're always on peg stands. All the small figures used to get them. Why the hell aren't we getting them with these? I mean, that's the one thing about this line, aside from the fact that they got great points of articulation, but just not as many as the Marvel Legends line, which these are very similar to price, size, everything. I mean, the quality of the details of what the figures look like, it's top notch.
That makes no sense. Why wouldn't they have peg stands? I mean, that's what majority of people are using these figures for, is for display.
Yes, see them on them. You see they come with a little round one. They're nondescript. I mean, the ones that used to come with the 375s would at least say Star Wars on them. Sometimes they'd tell you what the figure was. I don't want much, Bruce. I just want a little generic one. Just even 1 foot.
I know. Let's make you happy, because, you know, you need your sleep. We don't need you up all night posing these figurines before you go to bed.
I know. I've debated bringing my bed down in the studio, but Mari said she'd leave me.
You know what we should do for our Patreons, or Patreon, our Patreon exclusive content? You give like a tour of your house of all the stuff that you're talking about, like a video tour. That would be really cool.
That is part of the process. You know, I've talked before about how I'm redesigning the studio and stuff. I've got all my camping gear out, and what sucks is since we moved into this house, I built this whole spot for my camping gear, and then we went caving, or not caving, we went to the snow 2 years ago. And that stuff is still out in my studio. I brought it back and it did not go back on the shelves right. And somebody else put other boxes there. And since then, it's just been a nightmare. And so I've been working on it, because I'm like, I want the stuff out of the studio so I could take pictures and it's just a clear studio like it was the first 2 weeks I moved in. So I've been building shelves and stuff. That's the push, and that is definitely the goal. I want to get a better camera to do more of that, because I've got a great space. I mean, so much so that I'm constantly like, well, which angle, if I put my desk over here, would it get more of what's behind me? Because I don't know. I mean, it's been a while since we did a video, you know, pod for the fans that are watching, but there for a while it was literally I had like less than 6 feet and I had the main shelf right behind me, and that all came in really crystal clear. But now I'm in a spot where I get 3 of the 4 shelvings behind me, but they're all so far back that I really feel like it's not even captured. So I'm like, I got to do something different, because I mean, this stuff's got to be displayed, and I love sharing it. You know, like I had somebody just give me the Ewok Village, which I also could mention too. My friend Robert Pyle gave me a vintage Ewok Village, complete with an Ugonaut. So I even have that set out. So I mean, it's been a really cool week in that regard with just my collection growing, but through no fault of my own. I mean, it just happened to be people were like, hey, are you looking for something? Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll give it all.
There's just people like you. They're just throwing. Well, hold on. People like you, Mark. That's why they send you things. But let me ask you something. What is up with you and Steve Glosson? Steve Glosson was on last week. He says you don't like him. He likes you. Why don't you like him?
I love Steve. I think what me and Steve have is that awkward bromance, you know, like we're both Star Wars fans, but I'm one of those geekier, like I dare say geekier, because like his geekier is more Disney side, which is great too, because I love Disney as well. But I went EU, you know, so like I'm still in that coping phase, you know, like I'm like, oh man, I still got the rose colored glasses. Everything in the EU is great. I'm reluctant to admit there were mistakes. And when I do, you know how I'm quick to say it's the fault of the story group. There was no story group at the time controlling things. And now I'm like, wait, we got a story group, but they're not controlling things. What? You know, and I really think that's just it right there. It's just the oddness of me being that type of fan. Because usually when I'm around other fans, you know, you don't want to be the one that's like, oh man, the EU was awesome. And everybody's like, I hate the EU. You know, because I'm also a Vong fan, which I also recognize, you know, for the people that love the EU, the Vong wasn't a lot of people's cup of tea. I mean, I had many friends of mine in the forums and stuff that they checked out at Chewbacca's death. They were like, I'm done. And, you know, then there were people now that are like, man, we traded Chewbacca for Han. I don't know if that was a good trade. So, I mean, I'm still like, there's a cynic part of me that I'm sure that's probably what galls Steve at times.
I don't think Steve's happy with anyone. That's what I learned from that episode, is he's just not happy.
What I thought was funny was, and I was going to mention at the beginning of the episode, I forgot. I'm a Whopper guy. give me some bacon on a Whopper and I'm good to go.
You know what? I like Burger King, but the fries aren't, they just don't do anything for me. They're just okay.
You gotta dip them in the fry sauce to the point where like you're just basically licking fry sauce off the fry.
Oh, yes. If those fries come out right away, they're great. But then if they just start to cool down, no, forget about it. Anyway, you know, that's for our fast food podcast that's coming out some other day. Because believe me, I could do a fast food podcast.
And that's right.
My belly shows that too.
Oh, man. So, yeah, that about wraps up this episode. We are going to have some spoilers, so stick around with us after the credits here. You know, Bruce, real quick, I believe it's Admiral_Rex on Twitter.
That is correct.
Excellent. You know, you can find me, IllogicalRogue2, or IllogicalRogue as Facebook dumps the two. Apparently, I found that out yesterday. Riley is at TheRileyGuy on Twitter. And, of course, you can find Bethany at Bethany L. Blanton. I believe that's hers. And, of course, everything Star Wars Report at TheStarWarsReport.com on Twitter. Although it's not with the .com, but you can also find all of our episodes directly on StarWarsReport.com, as well as all the other Second Airborne podcasts. We've got the Wampus Lair. We've got Star Wars Bookworms. We've got Star Wars Beyond the Films. We've got Pod City, Cloud City Casino. That's our gaming podcast. Bruce, you were just basically redoing that last week, kind of, even with Michael Morris.
That's where I got my start.
Yes, we used to have Rebels Roundtable. Now we've got Padawan's Perspective. I mean, we've got a plethora. We've got Ion Cannon, formerly We Talk Clones, great group of guys. I mean, we've got a lot of things to offer for you, so be sure to come and check that out, www.StarWarsReport.com. Also, again, thanks to our patrons, every one of you guys for sticking around, hanging on with us, supporting us, lifting us up for Celebration Orlando and helping us have a good time while we were there. Well, those of us who were anyway, because I wasn't. But still, I heard a great time was had by all, and that's what was important. So, Bruce, do we have anything else before we let Mon Mothma say her thing and get out of here into spoiler territory?
I think it's just time to go into spoilers. I've got nothing else.
Excellent. Well, as Mon Mothma once said, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast. So if you're afraid of spoilers, that's your cue. It's time to jump. Punch it, Chewie. Let's get into spoiler territory, Bruce.
You know what? You sent me an article the other week, something about the Jedi tree, and it got you all hyped up.
That was exciting. And in fact, what was even more exciting was the fact that I had forgotten about that. When I opened the link, I was like, oh, that's right. I sent that to Bruce.
Oh, yeah. I did not forget. I was like, ooh, when Mark comes back on the show, we're going to talk about it. As a matter of fact, it's not really an article. It's from a Facebook page called A News Hope.
Ooh, that's so punny. That's not even a punishment. That's just goodness. That's goodness gracious me right there. You know, what's funny, too, is we were discussing this tree in the Patreon chat. Because Riley and Bethany, they were there on Skellig Island. We're like, is the tree there? Is there actually a tree there? That's all post, right? There's no tree there, right? And I want to say someone said there was actually a tree there, like a remnants of a tree that was there, which was kind of interesting. But that seems to be the tree on Skellig Island in the film, although they're not calling it Skellig Island. I believe it's like Ajo or something like that.
Like Achu. I always say Achu.
Yes. The dojo meets Achu. But it's definitely there. On the island, you can see in the top picture here, the stairs kind of lead up to the one side that's jutting out. Almost kind of looks like it's two branches there that you go under. You see when Luke's walking out, when someone's kind of brightened up the picture and stuff, not only do you see Rey's staff, but you see that those cave walls aren't a cave at all, but you're in the trunk. So it's kind of like, okay, well, there's that spot, which when you look out from Luke, you kind of see the rocks on the far right side of the picture up above. So it's like, okay, this is starting to line up. And then, of course, we've got those books. But the biggest speculation at this point, because I don't think it's been confirmed, although I think it's pretty safe to say, is this is one of those Force-sensitive trees, like the ones we saw in Shattered Empire. and as well in the Jedi Temple back in episodes one and I believe in one and two. I believe they showed it. Maybe they didn't. Maybe it was only in the Clone Wars cartoon, but they always had that there. Luke in the Shattered Empire, he was able to get the branches or some saplings from the tree that was there. He brought one to, I believe it was to Endor, or maybe it was to Yavin. I think it was Yavin, actually, and gave it to Poe Dameron's parents, of all people. So there was always this promise of, you know, is there going to be more with this? That was one of the things I was like, man, please tell me there's more coming with this. And really, he had nothing really to say. So I almost wonder if that's one of those things like, you know, like somebody picked up on that and was like, hey, you know, let's do something with this forest tree.
Well, I find it interesting that in the trailer, when we see Luke say the Jedi must end, I've always thought of it as being in a cave. But you're right that when you lighten up that picture, and maybe some people picked up on this, but I didn't either. It's apparent he's actually within that tree. So mm-hmm. It's not a cave. He is in the tree.
It still could be a cave because, I mean, you know, there. So I cave all the time just last weekend. And a lot of caves are found when a wildfire from a lightning strike burns out a big section and a tree burns up and you find out there's a cave underneath it. Case in point, Dagobah. I mean, the cave that Luke went into was at the base of a tree as well. I mean, this could be one of those that you go into the hollow and Luke's main part of the house is in the hollow, but he's gone down into the island. I mean, there's no other structures here. So unless he's living in a really itty bitty place like Yoda, which would also be a ring theory thing, I guess, too. I don't know.
But there's definitely a connection between where he is when he says the Jedi must end and the tree. I mean, even if there's like a cave deep inside, I think the tree is definitely the entrance and exit to that cave.
Yeah. Oh, and then, of course, you've got the light on the books, which I mean, I don't know. This is kind of like the Arthur and the Sword in the Stone kind of thing. I mean, with the light being on it, it clearly has this, you know, drawn to me. This is fate kind of thing. This is important, you know, and you almost wonder, like, did Luke do that just because, like, it was like a solstice thing or what? I don't know. But you think about with the trailer when they're talking about, you know, I see light, I see darkness, I see the middle or in the between or something like that. And, you know, there are all those people when they had that moment where you see the Jedi symbol and they're like, oh my gosh, it's the great Jedi, which, of course, I don't think that's the case. But it does make you wonder if Luke is going to discover what's in between or create what's in between.
Yeah. And okay, so let me just back up on this tree thing again. So let's say this is a force tree. What does that mean? Like, why a tree? Yeah. What, like, does the tree have any kind of force power to it? Or, I mean,
it was unusually strong in the force, and I mean, it was an ascendant tree.
But what does that mean?
Which they could have done.
Like, what does it give him more power, insight into the force? Like, what is the advantage of a force tree to a Jedi?
Well, I would say, I mean, think about the Citadels, right? The Citadels, the Sith ones, like the one Vader uses and stuff, they're all built to channel the power of the dark side. And they were all put on locations that were deep in the dark side or tainted in the dark side, okay? Now, if the tree is a natural living thing that happens to be super force sensitive, it's basically like a natural version of a dark side taint. Right? It's so weird to say that, but it's almost like it's like the eraser to all the bad things. Like, for every location where Anakin wipes out a bunch of Padawans in a building and makes that place a dark stain on the existence, you know, you've got a tree or a plant or something that's just unusually strong in the force that creates the opposite of that. And, you know, they put it in the Jedi Temple because the Jedi Temple was built on a Sith location. So what better way to counter that darkness than with something of the light?
Okay, so the trees are alive. And in this case, the tree that we're seeing here on Achoo is dead. So would this tree no longer be force sensitive? Do you think there was a tree here before? And whatever happened with Kylo and the other Jedi in training, this tree died?
Well, and that's interesting too, because is where Luke trained. I don't think that this is the place Luke trained him. I think he trained him on another location and then came here later, which makes you think that it was already dead or been dead for a while. And that's what kind of I love and worry at the same time, because if that is the case, you know they're not going to talk about it. And if they do, Luke's going to just do it briefly, like, as old Jedi Temple, something bad happened. You're like, I want to know more. Like, I have a feeling like this tree could be the first unlocking of going back into the old Republic era. I mean, really, we've only got Bane from the Clone Wars, his ghost kind of coming forward. That's about it. Everything that we know is legends, and we know that legends are not canon. There may be truth in legends, but they are not one and the same. So the Sith could arose in a totally different way. They could have never been attached to a species named the Sith. They could just be, you know, a counter order of the Jedi. Maybe the Jedi and the Sith were something in between once, and there was a schism that took that something in between and divided it into a light and a dark faction. And Luke has discovered that, and he's trying to bring the two back together. Maybe, I mean, you know, you could go that route too, but I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things. The only thing we have is the fact that this has grown inside the Jedi Temple on Coruscant. I mean, Legends has had others. I want to say there was one on Dantooine as well. But aside from Luke taking those seeds and moving them, there's not much about it aside from, well, it grew at the heart of the temple.
Well, I do remember reading Shattered Empire and the Two Trees, and I thought, what significance does this have? And it looks like we're going to find out, at least find more about the trees or the significance of Force trees in The Last Jedi.
Yeah, and I mean, I keep going back to Greg Rucka, you know, his Shattered Empire. I mean, that was the only one. There's a behind the scenes on the wiki page where they talk about the Force sensitive tree, where he goes, if he's trying to recover knowledge, you know, it's like, I don't want to do a holocron. Holocrons have been done. Don't do that. And I could hear both Pablo and Leland groan, and they're like, yeah, not another holocron. And we've been talking a lot about Palpatine and really about how horrible he was. And I think it was Pablo who said, you know what? You should use the tree from the Jedi Temple from the Clone Wars cartoon. I was like, oh, that's a fantastic idea. So Pablo threw that idea out. Well, and you know Pablo's not one to just throw anything out lightly.
Well, I also wonder, because I reread the Thrawn trilogy not that long ago, and there's a tree involved in that book too, which made me wonder if that idea came from the tree in the Thrawn trilogy had some kind of spark in creativity in the storyline for the Clone Wars.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a Force-sensitive tree, but I remember it was like at the, I guess, was it the Jedi? Not the Jedi Temple, but maybe it was at the Republic. It was something where I remember that Thrawn could listen to conversations going on within the Republic from this tree or something.
Delta Source. That was,
yes,
Delta Source.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Palpatine had set up a computer system inside the plant itself. That was, I had that same feeling at times with the whole thing that was going to be that. Yep. And with that, yeah, we definitely need to go to our next spoiler because we're way afield again. That's my fault. My bad. But speaking of bad things, did Lego spoil something about Snoke?
And the answer is yes. They spoiled it.
Are you okay with this spoil, or is it just vague enough that you're down?
It's vague enough that I'm down because this is the spoiler section, so we're really going deep into this. So there's this one Lego set, and it shows the little figures, and there's a First Order officer, First Order shuttle pilot, First Order stormtrooper, First Order stormtrooper sergeant, Supreme Leader Snoke. Supreme Leader Snoke is a little Lego figure. Now, I want you to visualize what Snoke looked like in The Force Awakens. This does not look like that. Now, he's a bald guy. He just looks like, you know, just some regular bald guy, but he's wearing like a yellowish cream color like pantsuit. they even described here, I found this in metro.co.uk, they even described him as a humanoid wearing robes that are a healthier color skin to that of his previous form, where he was deathly pale white. So yeah, he's not pale white, he's got like Caucasian skin. Now, is this like a younger version? Like, do we see him like healing himself from something in this movie? This figure really has got me wondering.
Yeah, and what's funny is when I looked at this, he's not even what leapt out to me. What leapt out to me was BBSE.
Yes.
Or I mean, I think it's SE. It's hard to say from the picture, but I was like, they've got their own Imperial, it's Imperial still, isn't it? Or First Order droid. I was so tickled by that. And then I saw not the figure, because the figure doesn't look like Snoke. Then I saw Supreme Leader Snoke. I was like, wait, is that right? Because I'm in the same boat. Like, I didn't think robe. I mean, you know, the article, it mentions flat out that he's wearing robes. But I am in the same boat. I'm seeing like a prison suit. Like, I was thinking, like, this is Lex Luthor escaping from the prison.
Yeah, it does. Or it even looks like a yellow karate uniform or something. It's really yeah. strange. And you wouldn't think, picture Snoke in that. But again, he's not white. You know, he's not that deathly white looking thing. He looks just like a Caucasian bald man.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and I want to say, when it comes to the toys, like, that's, I think it's going to be a hard sell. I mean, you know, you're always going to have spoilers get out through toys, but at least they're not doing like back in our day, Bruce. You remember when you would get the G.I. Joes and they'd have that fact file on the back and it would give you all the details about the character. And then they would do that with the Star Wars things and you would get your episode one and it'd be like, oh, and here's Corporal Topples and he does all this, that, and the other thing. And here's Darth Maul and Darth Maul is blah, blah, blah. And you're just like, I don't want to know all this yet. Like, what? Boba Fett's a clone? Like, they're definitely playing that tighter to the skin. I mean, really, all they're giving us here is the figures, and we've got to go with that. And really, I think it would have been worse had they given us a Black Series figure of Snoke in this costume than this, because Lego styling, the way that they do their stuff, I mean, it's generic. It's a body that they're going to print it over. I mean, you know, the girl wearing a dress is going to look like the guy wearing pants. They just got a different thing. So, I mean, this is a brilliant way to do that. If you're going to roll out this guy, because everybody's got a Snoke theory, everyone's got a Snoke theory, and everyone's Snoke theory sucks.
Yeah, and I have a feeling this true Snoke person is not meeting anybody's theories. This one really has me wondering. I think when I go into The Last Jedi, the thing I really want to know about is Snoke at this point.
And the other one, which I believe you shared from International Business Times,
yes,
is a first order heavy assault walker. And its characters are, of course, a Jedi-like lightsaber welding Rey, resistance trooper, Captain Poe Dameron, a First Order walker driver, and the First Order stormtrooper.
Okay.
What I find interesting about this one is the background on the package itself.
Wait. What about the background?
Well, I mean, the only time we've seen any walkers so far in the trailer is when we see those little, like, pod racer like crafts that drop out onto the desert field, and they've got the red racing, and then in the background you see the walkers.
Yes.
The background here looks desert-ish, and it looks like there are walkers in the background. So I have a feeling that Rey is going to, as well as Poe, factor into that battle.
Yeah. That's a big reveal here too. One is, and you can't tell, like you said, with Lego sometimes, but this Lego walker looks like a regular walker we saw in The Empire Strikes Back. Which I keep hoping things will start to look more different, but
no, it does. It does look a little different. I mean, it looks more hunched back. Yeah. It looks like it's like the middle part is pushed up onto its upper shoulders.
It's the hunchback of walkers.
Yes, exactly.
So, and then the other thing about this, you had mentioned earlier in this episode, oh, I don't know, maybe we'll see Poe become a general. Well, I kind of snickered at that when you said it, because coming up in this section, we find out that Poe becomes a captain. Or was he always a captain? I mean, we never really got his rank, did we?
That is a good question, because I had assumed he was already a captain. So now I've got to pay more attention to Mr. Poe Dameron. Which, because, of course, you know, the other one, he's in resistant stuff. But I don't know what the other one comes from the package. Was there a bigger picture on the actual website itself?
No.
Because the second one, it just shows a small up clip, and I think that this one, they're being even smarter, because I think this one's revealing a ship. I think we're seeing Vice Admiral's Holdo's ship, because you've got her. You've got the Resistance bomber pilot, a Resistance bombardier. You've got a Resistance gunner, and then you've got Poe Dameron. So you've got some pilots here. Either it's a couple ships or it might be her capital ship. That's a tough one to say, man.
Yeah, and again, I don't think she's going to be she's going to be Rey's mom. Or maybe. I don't know. Yeah, I'd like to see that set bigger. I'm online right now trying to see if I can find, like, a better picture of that box. Because what I got, like you mentioned, it's from the International Business Times. but I know it's appeared on Reddit and some other places, but I haven't got, I want more is what I'm saying. I need to see more.
Yes. And you're right. He was a commander in episode 7. So he is getting promoted. So, yep.
Oh, now you just ruined the movie for me.
Spoiler. Oh, it's a good thing we're in the spoiler section.
You know, sometimes I worry, Mark, about putting stuff in the spoiler section because I'm afraid you and Riley might go, I didn't want to know this. No.
There is a devil may care attitude, and you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, I guess. I mean, I am in that boat where I don't want to know too much because I'm worried about my misconceived notions, my preconceived notions, my misconceptions. You know, that's always been the real devil in the details for me. I mean, that's the one thing that can make you start to question about the movies. And luckily for me, like the first time I had it happen, it was episode 1 when we get to the Gungan scene when they come out of the mist. Mm-hmm. And luckily that happened so late in the movie that I'd already enjoyed most of it that I was like, man, that was such a letdown. Because I thought that was going to be so bombastic. Like, oh my God, they're going to sneak attack everybody. But wasn't the case.
I thought the same thing, yeah. I was kind of bummed that it wasn't anything bigger than that.
Yeah, exactly. But so I'm kind of like in that realm of like, I don't want to get to that. But right now I'm not having that with episode 8. I'm kind of like full steam ahead. Like I'm ready. I don't want to know too much because I want to have the surprises. But the worry for me isn't episode 8 at all. For me, it's more the Han Solo. You know, and you've seen me on social media. I've been struggling with this. I haven't seen enough of Alden Ehrenreich stuff to feel as confident as Riley and other people that I trust these other people that tell me he's going to nail it. I really do. I trust you all. I'm just trepidatious because I've had people tell me things are going to be as great as I hope they were, and I've been disappointed. And I just don't see him as Han. And so for me, the whole idea of going to a Han story, I'm not really as excited right now. I'm more excited about the side characters and the people that are coming into it than I am about knowing more about Han. And they haven't even sold me on the plot. It's just like, I'm afraid this is going to be the movie I feel the most let down about because I'm not excited for it. I'm still waiting for that excitement. And hopefully all it's going to take is the trailer. Because so far, every trailer I've seen, I've been like, oh my God, did you see the trailer?
I don't, you know, and this movie is coming out 5 months after The Last Jedi, the Han Solo movie. So because it's such a short window, I wonder if we will see that trailer with The Last Jedi. That'll be the first time we see a Star Wars trailer for an upcoming Star Wars movie during a currently released Star Wars movie.
You're right. And I think all signs lead to yes. The question there being is, will they have dropped it at a convention beforehand? Because usually they save those for some big things. Although, you know, you go back to the prequels and stuff, that was like the big thing. You remember, I mean, even MC Chris talks about that in The Fandom Awakens about how, you know, I'll go and watch a movie with Jennifer Lawrence. I don't even care as long as it's got the trailer with Wookiees and droids. Yeah, I mean, we were doing it. Wait, the trailer's where? I'm there.
Or I wonder if they'll try something different where they'll tease during the trailer segments, all the different trailers are going, and then there's a tease saying, stay tuned for after The Last Jedi for a preview of the new Han Solo movie.
Oh, God, man, you're just tempting me really bad today, bud.
Hey, so, Mark, I know you've been camping a lot, but did you listen to last week's episode where we talked about some photos we saw from the Han Solo set? Have you seen those pictures?
Yes, I did. I did.
Now, did that get you excited?
So, it did, but... So I don't know. Maybe not. No, they didn't. I gotta be honest, man. They didn't. They didn't excite me as much as I was hoping. Like the car, especially. Which, real quick, kudos to Michael Morris on the whole transports a B-wing thing. I never picked up on that at all. Uh-huh. And I might be in Steve's camp that we're in denial, but I did see the B-wing when I looked at it in the Lego form. I was like, oh, if that's really the case, that's pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, that's one of those things. When I saw that blue hot rod thing, I was kind of like, are we getting American Graffiti for yes. Han? Because Harrison Ford was in American Graffiti. I'm like, I don't know.
I don't think it has to do with Harrison Ford being in American Graffiti. But yes, I think we're getting at least a segment of the movie that's going to be American Graffiti.
Like, you know, we always see the Easter eggs and stuff. And if they're going to go with like that 50s type thing, you know, like I was down with Flo in Dex's Diner and stuff. Like, so I'm okay with the idea of going to a 50s futuristic look. But I just want one set of aliens to walk by and have one, you know, a guy and a girl. The guy's got his arm around the girl and he looks over at like Han and says, "I got chills. They're multiplying," as he walks away. You know, we just got to have one of those. Like,
so he went Star Wars Grease.
Yeah. I mean, what's got that feel, man? It really, like, it's got that in the future feel to that, going back to the sleek lines of the 50s and the 40s kind of thing. And like, I don't know if that's going to be because we're in that era, because I didn't quite get that feel with Coruscant when we were there at the prequel trilogies. And I have a feeling like, is this going to be even more before the prequel trilogy? Like, is this going to be the prequel? Like, do we know exactly when this is set yet?
I don't think we've been told when it exactly takes place, but I'm assuming it's about, from what I've gathered or what I've heard, maybe about a decade, 10 years before A New Hope, maybe.
Okay. So, I mean, I kind of get the feeling that we're just like on one specific planet that happens to be stuck in the 50s, but went futuristic. And while the pictures were cool and stuff, it's not enough. I don't know enough of the background, you know, like, are we going to see Han racing? Because canon Han races a heck of a lot more than Legends Han. You know, Legends Han started as a swoop bike racer, but wasn't really racing starships like this Han is. I mean, he did later with the Falcon and stuff, but this Han, like, his later career is all about racing. He goes back, he's an announcer, he sets up the rules, he's an official. So, you know, I could see them going that direction. Like, this Han could be more like Dominic Toretto, or maybe more like Brian was, you know, being like Brian O'Connor, mm-hmm. where Brian was always with the Skylanes. Maybe Han's that way. Like, he likes a certain style old car. And, you know, it takes, you know, having met Lando Calrissian to broaden his horizons to other vehicles and other ships and other makes and models out there. You know, Han, I know you're a Chevy guy, but have you looked at this Millennium Falcon over here?
Well, you know, I don't want to ruin things for you, but I just, I'm putting in a link to one other spoiler that I want to share. Uh-huh. Hold on here. I want to make sure I'm doing this right, because this is another photo that's coming from, this time, The Last Jedi. And I want you to click. It's under the last picture of the Lego Star Wars stuff. If you click on that, you'll see one more spoiler for tonight's show.
Oh.
Have you seen it yet?
Oh, I did.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we have a leaked photo from The Last Jedi. Footage reveals that Chewbacca is balding since The Force Awakens. Yes,
yep.
He's got a bald head. He's furry everywhere else, but he's bald on top, just like any other middle-aged man. We're getting furry everywhere else except on top. And actually, no, it's all a joke. It's from The Onion, and I just thought it was pretty funny to see a picture of a bald Chewbacca.
That's great, because, you know, the stress of children will do that to you. And, of course, when, you know, your godson murders your best friend. Lose my watch. Life debt. I failed you. Oh, what a great spoiler to wrap that up with, man. Bruce, we've almost gone on for almost an hour and 30 minutes.
How is that possible? I don't know how this always happens. Every time I come on these shows, I'm thinking, oh, yeah, we got like 20 minutes worth of stuff and we'll be done.
I could have swore 20 minutes in we were at Boba's Bounty, man.
Yeah, no, it just, when you're having fun, you just lose track of time.
Yes, indeed. And remember, guys, gals, everybody out there, you go to our Audible trial, go to www.audibletrial.com/Star Wars Report. You get a free audiobook. They're one of our sponsors out there. You can also send us voicemail. You can send us email at StarWarsReport@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/StarWarsReport, as well as Twitter and iTunes. Be sure to send us those iTunes reviews. Help us grow as a show. Let us know what you like, what you don't like. And let us know what you like, because remember, we are a unifying force, a positive force in fandom. So once again, for Star Wars Report, this has been Mark Herleman
and Bruce Gibson
saying thanks for listening. May the Force be with you, and many Bothans died bringing you this podcast.
Here's Whistler.
What timing?